Fly Me to the Moon, taking Middlesbrough football fans through the Premiership cosmos. And hey, if I'm mispronouncing Middlesbrough, realize, one, I'm an American, and two, it's the fault of the YouTube pronunciation video.
Welcome home. Welcome. Come on in and close the door. There are many people who might recall that Peter Zalee moment, but maybe Aitor Karanka, George Friend, and others aren't. It's time for another edition of Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast with the podcast audio companion to issue 612. Of course, it's the home game against Birmingham City. Rob Nichols, Birmingham City, or indeed the welcome return of at least three, well, four if you include Jukovic. I mean, lots of them coming home, basically. Yes. You got Lucas, you got George Friend, you got another chap who features in Fly
Me. Adam Clayton.
Adam Clayton, etc. And
of course, don't forget Josh McCracken.
Exactly. It's almost as though they're kind of coming to see what they could have had as opposed to being with Birmingham. But let's get the thing out of the way first and foremost. At least we don't have to worry about the FA Cup anymore, despite the fact that Middlesbrough had a perfectly good penalty appeal turned down. It was a handball by anybody's reckoning. Obviously, our Brentford supporting van is quite clearly obviously dealing with that. And you didn't really want to be in a draw, which would have seen Leicester City return. I mean, that wouldn't have been good, would it, really?
Oh, no. I thought it was a very good performance, and especially considering the circumstances, which weren't good for either side. I think they put on a really good display. Really, it was of attacking football. It was an excellent game to watch, and as a whole, I thought the FA Cup over the 3 days, the opportunity to be able to watch every match on the FA Player, for instance, really opened it up to fans at a time when everything's been closed off to them. And I thought that there were some great ties, and it was the best third round, I think, that I remember for many years, and plenty of reasons to think that the magic of the cup is still there. But now we're back to the league, the nitty gritty. Yeah. Yes,
we don't have to worry about Chorley, Crawley, or any other C words coming through on the whole system. So step away from that. And in fact, already as a result of that, I see Bradford City have actually signed Borough striker Roman Burrell. Until the end of the season, he's actually gone on loan to them from that point of view. I mean, one substitute appearance since he moved from Grimsby in 2019, and I think again demonstrated that Borough did well. I mean, it wasn't a case of, oh, we just gave up, etc. I think it was a good performance and bodes well, really.
Yes, I think you mentioned Burrell, and Neil Warnock said at today's press conference how ideally he wants to get several players out on loan now. But obviously, and I think that what that game highlighted was there were several players that came onto the pitch or involved that need league action. Stephen Walker's just come back from MK Dons. He scored two goals in his last game there, which was the trophy that they play at. Now I'm not sure what the sponsor is this season, if they've got a sponsor, but he's been recalled because he needs more games. He was starting off the bench, so he needs to find a club where he can play games. And I think with somebody like Nathan Wood, who played really well as centre back, for him, it's a question of whether he needs the games, but we might need him as cover in case we get any injuries or suspensions. So that's the sort of problem. And some of those players showed that they could possibly step forward and fill in, as Sam Bollerin did, who came on as substitute and scored immediately, didn't he? But that was the one really sad thing. I think sadder than going out of the cup was the injury to Marcus Brown, his knee injury. And I think they're waiting to see today how bad that is.
Of course, from the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon, Matt Smith, a fairly unpopular opinion, as he claims himself, actually arguing that we should go into another circuit break, that actually football should stop. And he cites some really interesting statistics with respect to that. We've already seen a week in which footballers have been criticised for goal celebrations and so on. Is this something which you're in favour of, Rob? I mean, was Neil? I mean, I think Neil Warnock's very much in favour of carrying on with the game, etc. But who knows? Again, it's operating on a day by day basis.
I think so. I think at the moment, for me personally, it gives me something to look forward to, and I think that must be the case for a lot of people. But I think you're right. I don't think you could make a should make a long-term decision. I noticed that today that UEFA are trying to make the fans, giving the fans 12 days to decide on whether they want to get their money back for their European championship tickets that were being held over from last year. Well, that's wrong, isn't it? Surely it should, you know, fans have been patient, and I think that they shouldn't be forced into a decision. And but for football as well, it's case by case, day by day, week by week. I think Warnock said today, though, he does feel that there's some responsibility. If you are playing, he hopes that the players can show a little bit more of an example on the pitch. Although I don't know whether it's that important myself, actually. We know the ball testing and everything, and it would be good if they didn't, but I don't think it's like as important as many other things during this lockdown.
And you could actually argue that if we went back to the days where you could actually receive more than one postcard a day in the same day and actually get a letter in the same day, then actually players then didn't necessarily or weren't renowned for their hugs and celebrations from that point of view. It was a handshake at worst, really, from that point of view, or at best, I would say. Neat segue there to, of course, Borough postcard mystery, the centre spread story, which is a fascinating tale. I thought for a moment we'd actually got our colleague to write another Sherlock Holmes mystery about this postcard.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Over a century ago, of course, and share the story, Rob. Why did you come across these cards which had the wonderful line, "Not coming home tonight, Tuesday, Walter," addressed, of course, to somebody in Darlington?
I got the I was doing a sort of survey on the moors in about October, and a guy came up to me who was a collector, and he said, "I've got these two Borough postcards, and I wondered if you could find out something about them." And he gave me these two cards that from 1909-1910, the postmarks on the back, and one's an early action scene between Borough and Nottingham Forest, and the other one was a picture of a player. So I got in touch with two or three people that I know that are Borough historians, and they gave me some information. They identified the players, Andy Aitken, who was the player manager at Borough, who had been something of a star at the time because he'd played for Newcastle when they won the league and got to two cup finals and lost them both. And then the other one was an action shot, which Sean Wilson, who was a Borough statistician and historian, was quite excited about because it showed the old South Stand, which predates Ayrton Park. It was the main stand at the old Linthorpe Road ground, which is, I used to say it's that Quicksave was built there, but Quicksave is no longer there. It's a hall of residence now, I think. Opposite Swatter's Car, there used to be a football ground there for about, what was it, about 25 years or so. Middlesbrough played there. That was our Northern League ground, and then it was our first league ground. And so that postcard shows that. And the exciting thing about it was this postcard was somebody was sending a postcard home. Who was the person sending the postcard home? And why were they saying, how could they possibly be sending a message on it saying that I won't be in tonight?
It's like Instagram or TikTok or Twitter.
Yeah. And this, so this was quite interesting to find out that there was so many posts at the time because people didn't have phones. People didn't have phones in the homes until, probably the 70s, a lot of people. I think when I was away at university and stuff like that in the 80s, you sometimes had calls that were incoming only, didn't you? Things like that. Anyway, people didn't have calls. They could send a telegram, but a telegram was quite expensive. But the postal service was so good in those days, and there were so many posts that you could send a card or you could send a message to somebody else in the next town and actually possibly get a reply within the same day. So that was fascinating, and fascinating to find out a little bit about the guy who sent the card and who he was sending it to.
Anyway, back to contemporary matters a century later or thereabouts, or more than a century later. As we said, it is the return of Birmingham City. George Friend, of course, very much sort of focusing on the fact that he's more than just good friends in the Gazette. Having spent time from 2012 with Borough, he basically saw a whole range of things there and really bonded with the area. And I suppose that memorable image, really, when Cardiff City at home, of course, which made its way onto social media, which suggested, obviously, obviously his time was coming to an end. I think fond memories, and probably as a part of Borough's second most successful team of the 21st century, really, in terms of obviously at least achieving promotion.
Yeah, absolutely. And then latterly, coming back from injury to play as a centre back and to hold our defence together to skipper us to survival under Neil Warnock, and that in the long term, the medium term, is going to be just as important as that promotion. Because if we'd slipped down to the third tier, well, this was no time to be slipping that far down with wage controls and everything like that. So, being a phenomenal player on the field and just a great character and a real personality in the community as well. Do you remember at the start of lockdown where it was George Friend was ringing up people from the football club, the more elderly.
That was lockdown one, of course, as opposed to lockdown.
That was lockdown one. Hello, it's George here. Do you remember that? That was that was typical of the man here. So it's such a shame that we can't be welcoming him back. And Adam Clayton, who was here for six seasons, was a real sort of warrior presence, I think, on the pitch. And it's a shame we can't be applauding them back. They have gone so it's so soon since they went. And of course, Aitor Karanka. Well, perhaps it's as well we're not here to applaud him, because the last time we did that, he turned around and beat us 2-0 with Nottingham Forest. So we wouldn't want to see a repeat of that. Birmingham are really struggling, but. I don't think I mentioned this in the fanzine, but their away record is far superior to the home record. So we hope that doesn't continue.
Well, two other interesting points. I mean, for the benefit of folk who probably will, if they have a cultural reference, I'll say well done, but you must be very chronologically gifted to check out the line Clayton's Place as opposed to Peyton Place, which of course was the sitcom of the the first kind of glossy soap opera thing of the
it was
the
soap opera, wasn't it?
And Adam Clayton, you never had a chance to meet him, I gather, Rob. I mean, came close to, obviously, very brave to actually open up about his own issues with respect to mental health and so on. But of course, he headed on before then, and probably isn't going to be as fondly remembered initially as George Friend because of the way, again, in which Clayton effectively started withdrawing his tools, shall we say, towards the end of last season, and obviously sort
I think that's true. I think there's Chris Bartley mentioned something about that, but I don't think it was actually true. I think he was injured, and he like George Friend wanted to stay till the end, even though. It was a risk for both of them because they both had a lot of injuries, and the risk is that they're beyond the end of their contracts, and if their injury goes serious, then they may never get another contract, and we could see that with the two guys that did bail out, Ryan Shotton and Rudy Gestede, both ended up playing in Australia. So Clayton did play on, but he eventually did leave because he just couldn't get fit, it's a shame that sort of message hasn't been borne out. And actually, Alex, I was actually at the door of the school to try and interview Adam Clayton, and hadn't found out that it had actually been cancelled, because that day there was a new sort of thing in football where footballers, because of COVID, they couldn't meet any of the public. So it was just that day. So that was very timely. You know, it says a lot about the world was changing in that day. So that was the day I was due to meet and interview Adam Clayton.
Yeah. Well, speaking about changing worlds, changing times and so on, one of the classic Ian Smith columns focuses on a number of people you may not even remember these days, the likes of Lee Dong-gook, Michael Ricketts, of course, Rajiv van Lapara, Kieran Dyer, Kiki Sola, and of course, Ricardinho. Never quite worked, did they, really? I mean, if you put them all together in the same team, I mean, Kieran would probably end up being injured. Rajiv van Lapara, not really sort of working through this. It's that sort of gamble. I mean, we're hearing rumours that maybe clubs might be interested in taking Britta Somba longer. We're not sure. I mean, in terms of where we're going, I don't think Neil Warnock's necessarily said he's after anybody in particular, although nothing's ruled out whilst we're in the transfer window and so on. But it is one of those very timely lines that has been put forward about how sometimes you sign a player, you panic, they don't really fit into the system, and it could be the worst thing you could do.
No, the January is a window. It's a window where people gamble, don't they? Where teams that are struggling in the Premier League suddenly just try and throw money at a situation of a player that could possibly get them out of their troubles, and or teams go for the final piece in the jigsaw that could maybe get them promoted. We've done it many times, and some of the players that we've signed in the January window have been great successes. But this list shows that not always. Sometimes that you make that gamble, and they appear to be good gambles. I thought, like Michael Ricketts, had two seasons where he'd been phenomenally successful, goal scoring, and got into the England team, etc. But he barely scored again. and Ricardinho ended up going to the World Cup with Brazil, but he never actually came off the bench for Middlesbrough. I remember him against Arsenal. I remember him warming up, but he didn't come on. That was in the away game. And Lee Dong-gook, obviously that was too big a step, I think, coming from South Korea to Middlesbrough to the English football.
He should have been Korea. He would have had much more support if he was North
well,
Korea.
Well, maybe, yeah. But he's gone on to play over 100 caps for his country and score over 30 goals, which is a lot of goals. And we know that some of his teammates, look at Son at Spurs, is a phenomenal player, a world-class player. So I think if you sign in the summer, Alex, you've got more chance of finding your feet and fitting in before the season starts and bedding into the team structure. January is a big gamble. And I think for us, I think Borough fans would probably settle for keeping all our players and not losing anybody. Obviously, Assam Belongia mentioned the fact that he and a couple of others are out of contract at the end of the season. That's the situation where that's the reason why he might be looking, or his agent might be looking around, and why other clubs might be thinking, can we come in? Can we make a bid that's perhaps bigger than what the one that Middlesbrough are going to be offered? And that was what George Friend, in the end, we offered him a 1-year deal, and he got offered a 2-year deal at Birmingham City, and it was as simple as that, really.
And of course, there is that moral aspect in terms of what money will be available, given obviously the constraints and the fact that we're still pretty much in clear, even with the likely rollout of the vaccine, one of three, in terms of where we're going, how things are heading up, and so on and so forth. But let's move on to another aspect, because not one, but two South American legends are actually featured in Fly Me to the Moon. Not only is Juninho the cover edition in terms of a little bit of friendly snow that's actually there, of course, it is getting frosty these days, so a little bit of the first snozzy of the season could be heading on through. But we've also got that man who I still cannot ever forget the 1986 debacle, when, of course, he managed to work his way through Peter Schultz and use his hand to effectively sort of knock Bobby Robson's side out of the cup.
Yes.
But Jimmy Flynn has gone, I mean, he has just gone into overdrive on this one. I mean, this is like an Odyssey-like. It's almost though Homer's Odyssey was kind of not long enough for Jimmy Flynn to actually do. So he decided to actually do Diego scenario. What say you, Rob? Shall we actually attempt to give Jimmy Flynn his line with respect to...
This is the long poem, as you said.
It is probably the longest Jimmy Flynn poem I've ever actually seen. So we will attempt to work through this whole process in our own way, and then we'll come back and talk about Lukas Jukovic, upcoming matches against Nottingham Forest and indeed the Birmingham City game. So here we go. The Argentine nation is in despair over the death of a footballer who was worshipped there.
A boy born into Buenos Aires poverty who rose to the top of the football tree.
And a national hero grew to be Diego Armando Maradona. What a player was he!
In a meteoric rise from rags to riches, he became king of world football's pitches.
A diminutive man standing 5'5", with a ball at his feet, he came alive.
Blessed by the football gods with a talent supreme, capped by Argentina at the age of 16.
Arguably the greatest player soccer has seen, playing a brand of football thrilling and fine.
His style embodiment of all things Argentine, as elusive as the wind blowing through the pampas grass.
Impossible to grasp any defence he could pass, swaying with a tango dancer's styles, timing and grace.
Leaving hapless opponents with shadows to chase, with the power of a horseback mounted gaucho.
On a blinkered gold's mission, he would relentlessly go like an anaconda snake, slipping and sliding.
through packed defences smoothly gliding, a condor eagle swooping from on high.
There and gone in the blink of an eye, his hot-blooded, fiery Latin temperament.
To his football, a flammable passion lent, and in the face of ferocious foul treatment,
his anger he would frequently vent. After a flirtation with Barcelona, he decamped to Napoli.
And a Neapolitan legend came to be, with his inspirational, sensational, flamboyant play.
He carried the club to the pinnacle of Serie A, there on the Mount Vesuvius plain.
The volatile Argentine genius came to reign. The kid from a Buenos Aires shanty town
came to wear the Neapolitan football crown, erupting with brilliance on the Italian football scene.
Thriving in an atmosphere fiercely combative and mean, a flawed genius not averse to bending football's rules,
who on the World Cup stage match officials did infamously fool in 1986 under the hot Mexican sun.
He shot England down with a double-barreled gun, punching a ball into the England net
to claim a goal the football world will never forget. He followed this act of football infamy
with a magnificent goal of the century, dribbling through a despairing England team,
finishing with a strike to end their World Cup dream, a lethal combination of football brilliance and dark arts
that tore England's World Cup hopes apart. Tainted World Cup winner, flawed genius, saint and sinner,
his God-given talent cloaked a fallible human inner. His football's much-revered, occasionally reviled wild child,
leaving opponents bewildered, bewitched, beguiled. El Pibe de Oro, Argentina's golden boy.
To the Argentine nation brought jubilation and joy, a born into Buenos Aires poverty,
who climbed to the top of the football tree. Diego Armando Maradona, what a player was he.
Yeah, but he never played for Middlesbrough, so I'm really not sure why Jimmy actually went down that line. I mean, I'm used to sort of Middlesbrough football legends. I'm used to various other sort of elements. But really, Jimmy, I mean, you know,
he made an exception there, I think.
Yes. Yeah, clearly.
Because he was exceptional, an exceptional player, I suppose.
Yes. And you could say, well, he was also, I think he still is, actually. I think he's related by an in-law to Sergio Aguero, much loved, of course, by another club entirely. So that's his
own. Okay.
I think as far as I'm aware, he's father-in-law, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so it goes. That's by the by. Lukasz Jurkiewicz. Who would have thought he would be the Davy Jones of an independent club scene with the tambourine as poor as an image which is just so wonderfully put together by Tracy Hyman? I didn't even realise Jurkiewicz actually had a musical career, but no, the proof is in the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon, the fanzine, with Jurkiewicz actually pictured providing percussion for Sunderland alternative harmony group Lilliput at the independent venue in Sunderland back in his borough days. Were you aware of this, Rob? Did you ever
I was there.
Call him
I was
out?
There because I'd just seen him playing at Ayrton Park, and then I went to this gig in the independent venue in Sunderland, and then the band Lilliput came on stage, and then looked in the audience, and there was thought that's Middlesbrough centre forward in the front row in Sunderland, and he had a tambourine, and then
and
he,
Davy
then
Jones.
He had some other percussion. Davy Jones, absolutely, yeah, he was yes. For the more seasoned listeners, so from being on the pitch at the Riverside to being on the front in the front row of this gig, and it turned out that he was a friend of Joe, the singer, one of the singers from the band, and he'd known him from the past, and he wanted to get involved with the gig, so it's great.
Yeah, well,
and he was a bit of when he I remember I spoke to him a couple of times when he was in Middlesbrough, and he I remember him asking me where if I could recommend any record shops where he could buy vinyl. So he went to some gigs here as well, not all of them that he played in, but he went to some gigs. I remember him watching a gig at the Westgarth Social Club, and he was often to be seen in record shops, like the record shop in Stockton, Sound It Out, buying vinyl records of different bands. So it's interesting to see, a bit different to what you might expect.
Yeah, well, almost a throwback to the days where you could meet our Premiership or the equivalent of Premiership First Division footballers coming out of newsagents. I mentioned that because actually I haven't had a chance. If Diego Maradona can actually get a mention, then I've also got to throw in heartfelt condolences to the family of Colin Bell, who, as you appreciate, Rob, I was a huge fan of. And in fact, he was the first major footballer who... I wouldn't say took me under his wing, but when my mum and I were down in Manchester, there was that moment we thought, that's Colin Bell coming out of a newsagent. And it was.
Right.
And not only did he actually sign my autograph book, which I had at hand, having pestered my mum to take me down to Main Road, he also arranged for us to actually have a tour of the ground and various other things as well. So really nice chap. Met him a couple of times. And again, I think the footballing world just losing a great deal from that point of view. So I raised that on the basis of...
Absolutely. A wonderful, wonderful player. Came from County Durham, didn't he?
Yeah.
I remember watching him at Ayrton Park. When he made his comeback, he was injured for about 3 years, wasn't he? With a serious knee injury. Probably the sort of thing that would
Thanks to Martin Buchan of Manchester United for that one.
Right. It's probably the sort of thing that could be fixed these days in a few months. Mm. But I remember him coming back and he wasn't the same player. He could only... He was known for his elegant long striding run, wasn't he? And when he came back, he could only do like a really short stride. He couldn't move his knee that much. But it was the days when Manchester City had two Bells. They had Colin Bell on the pitch, and they had that lady that looked
Big Helen. Big Helen, Helen used to ring the bell. That was her name.
Right,
Big
she
Helen.
Was like Bette Lynch, wasn't she? She had a beehive, and she had like a school bell that she used to ring.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
she was ringing the bell for Colin Bell on the pitch.
Yeah,
but he was an incredible player, and I always felt that his injury. Maybe perhaps was the reason for the downfall of Don Revie as England manager, because he was the sort of part of that team.
Back in the day, it was literally after Bell had scored two of the goals that beat Scotland 5-1 in 1975. And I think there was a definite sense there with Colin Bell, Gerry Francis, Kevin Beattie, and Keegan, of course, and Mike Shannon and various others that Revie was leading us into a brave new era. Sadly, it wasn't to be. So it goes.
Yep.
Anyway, moving on. Obviously, Colin Bell will be remembered very much as the King Colin Bell from that point of view. We move on. Birmingham City, they are beatable. It's not an essential win, but it would be useful, I think, if Borough could actually secure a win. And also if Aitor Kogranka could actually pass on some details to Neil Warnock about how to beat Nottingham Forest when we play them on Wednesday, because again, we've got that whole notion of Birmingham City at home, away to Nottingham Forest, and then literally in a week's time, and we might actually do another podcast just for this, it's welcome back Tony Mowbray and, of course, Stuart Downing to Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah, that's right. It's all these reunions going on at the moment. And it was good to see that Stuart Downing got himself a contract in the end at Blackburn. Some big players and on and off the pitch that are coming back to the Riverside. As we said earlier, it's just a shame that we can't actually be there to see them. I think you know, Tony Mowbray for being the captain, fantastic. In some respects, there's comparisons to George Friend, really, in that he was. Even though George Friend wasn't from this community, but he certainly threw himself into the community, didn't he? Mowbray was very much from here, and it's still, you only have to hear him speak, you know, that it's still in his blood and everything. So, but obviously, as we always say, and they're doing pretty well at the moment, aren't they, Blackburn? So,
well, Blackburn currently in 11th position, which might sound, it's mid-table. They're only 4 points behind Borough in 7th position.
Yeah.
So again, I think for that point, they have played a game more. So they've played 23 games as opposed to Borough's 22. And then, of course, you have got, as we look at the league, Watford, who, even with Luther Blissett and changing managers and all the rest of the bits and pieces, I keep saying Luther Blissett. Of course, I don't mean Luther Blissett. I mean Tridini, who, for my mind, is almost interchangeable with Luther Blissett. I don't mean Luther Blissett, Tridini, Luther Blissett. They're both very much Watford associated in terms of the line. Of course, Luther went for AC Milan, whereas Tridini, I don't think, will be doing that, but still.
I don't think Luke. Yeah, that's right. No, I know what you're saying is that Watford have still got an awful lot of Premier class players that were proven there. But they don't seem to be as always. They don't stick with their managers, do they? So, they chop and change massively, though, don't they? It's not just like not sticking with a manager. They go for completely different personalities and different from different countries, from different everything.
Almost as bad as Birmingham. Actually, Birmingham almost as bad as Watford. Who knows how long that Karanka will actually stay there, because it could well be his last match in charge. Just a final point, Rob. I mean, you've been at the press conferences. I would have thought for players returning, it's going to be quite unusual for them, because clearly they'll be used, obviously, to empty stadia now. But to go back to a place, and Karanka as well, where you think actually you were there for so often, and not having the crowd as well, could be quite, because it's almost like you're suddenly experiencing it as a reserve game as opposed to a genuine match. But
I know, as you mentioned, didn't you, George Friend, at his last home game, that he was pictured sitting on the bench. And he was just like looking around with his he had his shirt off, didn't he? And it was because he'd just come out of the changing rooms, and that for him was it was obviously a poignant moment that he was bowing out without any fans there, and then to return without any fans there. Yeah, I agree. It's going to be very disappointing and difficult for them as well. But they very much need to hold that together and to not ship any goals. And as you say, Ita Karanka's under a lot of pressure. And
effectively, they've got a sea of red. They have lost, lost, drawn, lost, lost for Birmingham City's last five games.
That's right.
You could include the sixth game, because they did, of course, go to the Etihad. And I think it's fair to say, they were not in the same league, both literally and physically, in terms of the game. It was more of a practice run for most of the game against City. Which,
if you think of the last time that Ito Karanka went, as far as I know, the last time he went there to Manchester City in the FA Cup was third round was with Middlesbrough, and we shocked Manchester City that day, didn't we?
Well,
before
you certainly did, Rob. we have to sort of work through that. Something which is important, we need to mention it whilst we've still got a few moments left here, of course, is the Middlesbrough Food Bank appeal, which clearly people can't. Look, we've said in the past, and it's not a political issue, it's wrong to have food banks in what's supposed to be a first world country. We should basically not have this. So, but allowing for that, clearly fans can't actually. Well, they can donate at the stadium, but it's in a different way. Do you want to just share with us how people listening to this can obviously still contribute to the food
bank? That's right, the appeal. Yeah. The demand is higher than ever now, and it always is high at this time of the year after Christmas, because people will give stuff at Christmas and then it starts to run out. But it's higher than ever now with COVID, etc. Some people not able to work, for instance. The whole ground is closed at the moment, so. Before Christmas, you could actually drive around to the back of the ground and put stuff on a trestle table, but that option's gone. But if you go to the ground now, there's a security guard in a little cabin as you come to the edge of the car park, and he will take food in. But if you go to there's a website and you can there donate money at that point, and that's. That's just as good, really, because they can take the money and they can buy the shopping list that they need. I think Tesco in Corbyn Ewm is one of the places that you can go and take food to. And the other is the actual food bank's address on Skipper's Lane. So if you just Google a Middlesbrough food bank, you'll get all the details there, including a shopping list of what they're actually looking for at the moment. Because what they do is give a balanced diet for 3 days to everyone that goes there. And they have on that shopping list, they know what they're short of and what they've got a lot of. Sometimes they've got lots of people have donated one particular item, so they don't need that. So just go on the website and you can make a donation there, or you can drop stuff off at the security guard at the riverside. But not tomorrow, of course, match day.
Exactly. So moving on to the final line, how can people actually get hold of paper editions of Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine, and how can they obviously sort of subscribe for the rest of the season?
Yeah, if you go to my website, which is fmttmborough.com, or go to, you can find FMTTM on Facebook, and I always put a link up on Facebook as well, or Twitter, if you find us on Twitter also, but yeah, they're the ways to do it at the moment, and basically we'll send it out through the post to you.
From Epics by Jimmy Flynn through to the great Borough Postcard Mystery, through to some of the welcome back lines, which Phil Spencer certainly, and indeed Stanis Stan, actually alluded to. This has been the podcast companion to Fly Me to the Moon, the paper edition 612, obviously for fans of Red Army TV as well, from that point of view, is going to. I think it's fair to say that although the next paper edition won't be until February, we will probably be back, I would have thought, next week, Rob, because again, as we look to the lineups, we'll have had two games by then. We'll also be looking ahead to not only the return of Blackburn Rovers, but we'll also be addressing the issue of the remaining January fixtures, which also include a home match against Rotherham United and then away to those Canaries against Norwich. So lots of things coming through in the remaining literally 14 days of the month, basically, in terms of where we're going after, I presume, a good 2-0 win for Middlesbrough against Birmingham City tomorrow.
Oh, I like that. Yes, I'll go for that. That'll be good.
Clean sheet and two goals. Probably both scored in the second half, so then they'll just relax in the first half. So it'll be 2-0 at half time and 2-0 at full time. So there we are. That's my prediction.
That's good. That's sorted out.
Well, exactly. You know, we wrap up then with those immortal words taken by your good self, Rob, as editor of Fly Me to the Moon, and they are:
"Come on, Borough!
Come on, Borough!
And up the Borough!"
That lass on Radio 4, who's sort of Charlotte Green, she's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that. Huh?
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So.
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a penalty for pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
See what we did there?
Yes, like it.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.